Hi, I'm Randy, a compulsive overeater. I came into Overeaters Anonymous at age 23 back in March 4th of 1976, and I have been abstinent for almost 39 years continuously. All that means is that I had enough desperation when I walked into the door that I was willing to do anything. There's a passage in the big book, I think it's in chapter 5, that it said that people didn't necessarily have to drink for long periods of time or in quantities. And it said this is especially true of women. But I think I packed more eating, compulsive overeating into my 23 years than a lot of people did in a lifetime. But even more so than the physical manifestation of the disease, I was somehow blessed, and I believe now that it was a blessing. I was blessed with knowing from age 11 or 12 that there was something drastically, drastically wrong with the way that I ate. Nobody else I knew ate frozen cakes out of the freezer at 8. I knew there was something wrong, and I just didn't know there was a name. So when I walked into my first OA meeting, I felt immediately like I was home. They pulled the covers off of me. They talked about all my secrets. They said all of the things that I had done and that I was too ashamed to admit. I somehow knew that OA was the answer to me. I believed it then. I believe it now. And it's weird because it never, never fails that whenever I get this swelled head that says that I've been around for a long time, I don't need this program anymore, something happens to whip my ass. And because I had what I call very good training, I've been able to recognize the fact that this is what I need. And I've kept coming back. As you can imagine, in 38 years, there's been a lot of life. I've gained and lost jobs. I've gained and lost relationships. A lot of things. This program has taken me in a direction that I never thought I would be in. If anyone would say today that you would be living in Tucson, Arizona, you know, talk about the boonies, that I would have told them they were completely out of their minds. But I moved from Cleveland to Los Angeles, from Los Angeles to Tucson, and you know what? Program is program. I'm eternally grateful to this program, and I keep coming back because I just keep thinking about the alternative. I remember my last binge like it was yesterday, and I hope that I never forget it. But I'm grateful to be here, and thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Randy. Hi, everybody. I'm Jerry. I'm an abstinent food addict, compulsive overeater.
Hi,
Jerry. Hi, I'm from Titusville, Florida, and I've been in OA since May 15th, 1993, and maintaining 100-plus pound weight loss. And here's my before picture if you want to see what it was like. But I wonder, I get up at 7 this morning. Who, has anyone here woke up before that?
What?
How early? Anybody before 5? All right. How about before 4? 4 back there? Okay, the lady that has her hand up, would you stand up? What time did you get up?
I actually traveled from Seattle, so I got up at 3:30.
All right. Okay. I want everybody to look. That is who is the longest timer in this room. Because this is a one-day-at-a-time program. So thank you for your abstinence. You are abstinent, right? Okay, I didn't check on that. So, but I've been abstinent approximately 8,090 days, one day at a time. It'll be 22 years in May. And that's a miracle. I've been on a lot of weight loss schemes. I've gone over 200 pounds three times in my eating career. And the third time, I hit 248, and I just stopped weighing myself. And but that was in January of 1993. And in between there and May, I almost blew my brains out. I got a doctor told me that my big problem, I had heart palpitations. He said, you know what your problem is? And I'm like, what? I thought a cancer or some big thing. He said, you're eating too much. You're 100 pounds overweight. He said, and if you don't do something about this, you may not live to see your 50th birthday. And it scared the bejeebers out of me. So that night I went back to the Pay and Weigh Club, where I almost got to goal weight once. But you know what happens? You celebrate, you know. You starve all week, go to the Pay and Weigh, and then go out and eat, right? So I never did hit goal weight. I don't know if you get a pin or what, because... But I prepaid for a whole year, and then I didn't go back. Because, you know, you figure if you made that big financial investment, that would do it. Well, that didn't do it. And so in May of 1993, I found Overeaters Anonymous. And I was pretty desperate. Like I said, within an inch of blowing my brains out. I knew where the gun was. I knew it was loaded. But I'd eaten so much, I couldn't get off the couch. So I laid there, and I prayed a prayer of desperation. I said, God, help me. And like 2 days later, my then-husband got a DUI, and he ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And May 15th, I ended up in Overeaters Anonymous. And my life has just been amazing. And for me, what I think about OA is about abundance. And if I had my druthers, I'd live in a little white house in Orlando, Florida, and have a little white picket fence, and I'd have 2.5 children and a husband that worked 9 to 5. He'd come home every night, you know. We'd have martinis together and then make mad passionate love all night long. You know, that's what I would have settled for. That, to me, was abundance. But what's going on in my life today is I'm traveling with my now husband, who I've been married to for 13 years, and... We left Florida 2 years ago, and we're traveling around the country in a 40-foot motorhome. And, you know, here's a man that doesn't want to get more than 40 feet away from me. That is a miracle. Because before OA, there was people that didn't want to get 40 feet near me, not, you know. And I have abundance in my life today. I really do. I mean, I have things that I never would have dreamed about. I never would have given to myself. I mean, something as silly as on the side of my RV window, we found this little hummingbird feeder. And so I can stand on this side of the window, and I found a formula that they really love. Well, of course, we know all about how to make sugar the best. Mine's the best hummingbird feeder in the neighborhood. But I'm standing there, and a foot away from me is this gorgeous iridescent green bird with a fuchsia head drinking from my little bird feeder. And I'm just like, oh my God, what a miracle. And those are the kind of things today I really appreciate. So, but I couldn't get there. I couldn't have this abundance in my life as long as I had the abundance in my mouth. So for me, it's a choice. And of course, before OA, abundance was also on my butt and my legs and my gut. You know, I was a big girl. And today I'm so free to live a life that I would have shortchanged myself. Even if I'd have lived the best life I could possibly imagine, it would be nothing compared to this life I have in OA. And I get choked up just thinking about it. So I'm glad y'all are here. I think it's going to be an amazing weekend. The way we travel, sometimes I get to big OA meetings and sometimes I have to, you know, do a phone meeting because there's no OA within a great distance of a national park or something like that. So I'm filling up. So if you guys see me, please make sure I get a hug from you because I want to get as much as I can this weekend. And here's my good friend, Margie.
Thank you for the warm welcome. My name's Margie, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Margie.
And I live near Portland, Oregon, and in a little place called Dundee. And my husband and I got married in February, 26 years ago now. Gosh, that's amazing. And so sometimes we celebrate by coming down here and doing this. And I think it's a really good, really good deal. And, you know, this is where the recovery is, and I've really enjoyed coming several times. So I came into Overeaters Anonymous when I was also in my 20s. I was 27, and it was August of 1977. So this June, I will turn 65. In fact, just this week, I got this thing that says, "Welcome to Medicare."
That makes you a long-timer.
Well, that alone doesn't make me a long-timer in OA, but, you know, when I came in, I was, you know, one of the young ones, and I came in the state of Oregon, and there were mostly, you know, middle-aged married ladies, and I was definitely not. and I felt like a little kid, and I'd already gone up and down in weight several times. I'd been in the pay and weigh place, and I did get to goal. That just means you get a lifetime membership. I'm sure you still have to pay every week, but it's been so long since I went there that I doubt if they'd honor my lifetime membership these days, but that's okay. I don't have any particular desire to do that. I've been abstinent for just over 13 years, and there is a huge difference there. Because my story is absolutely peppered with lots of relapse, and I am so very grateful to be abstinent these days. Where I was in OA, we didn't have a lot of people to lead us on, and the people we had weren't necessarily abstinent on an ongoing basis, mostly. And so the emphasis wasn't there, and we kind of struggled along just, you know, trying to figure things out. We didn't have any OA literature, and we had some pamphlets. And then there were quite a few things that were AA publications or similar to that. And, of course, the fabulous Big Book and the AA 12 and 12. And we were encouraged to go to open AA meetings. And it was after coming into OA that I realized that I had a problem with alcohol, too, because I went to open AA meetings. But, I heard about it because I got together with a guy who was an alcoholic, and I started going to Al-Anon meetings, and I was sharing with someone there about my eating. And she said, "You know, there's a program for that." Oh, really? And I'd heard about AA before, but, you know, in 1977, I'd never heard about Overeaters Anonymous. And so I started coming. It was amazing. I knew right away that it was the right place for me. I'm not sure I was ready to let go of the food, but I knew right away that it was the right place for me and that I really did belong there. I had gone up and down. I'd lost weight and gained it several times in my life already at that age. Some at home before I left to go to college, and then after I got into college. Then there were a couple of times of real surrender for me. I really have a very rebellious and defiant streak, and having people tell you what to do and what to eat and that kind of stuff has never been something I've been very willing to do. I have been more willing to do those things more recently because I realized that, because there weren't a lot of people practicing that kind of a program, we weren't taught really that kind of a program very much. Or actually, there were some people who were doing that kind of thing, but boy, I would do it for 21 days and then do something else. But never really believed that I needed to go to those kinds of lengths to do this. And for whatever reason, I never stopped coming to OA. So I went back up in weight at least twice and then came back down and never stopped going to OA meetings. I remember, binging on the way to meetings, feeling like I couldn't put sentences together, that I wasn't coherent in terms of things I had to say in meetings, and just not being able to get abstinent. But, I always knew that what would I do if I didn't come back? It was like, well, if I stopped coming to meetings, what am I going to do? Shut myself in the closet at home and eat? I mean, it was just, it was like, how am I ever going to stop if I do that? Because I always felt like, and I remember thinking sometimes, if I buy two of these big whole things, that maybe I'll hit bottom faster and I'll get well faster. I mean, and, there's some logic in there about how the program actually works, and that I really knew that it had to do with my willingness to work the program and not that the program I never said OA doesn't work. I usually said I'm not willing to work it. And the things that really have helped me a lot is that willing to be willing to be willing to be willing to be willing. I mean, I always wanted to stop eating and lose weight, but I wasn't willing to put the fork down or willing to be willing to be willing enough to do it. And so that kind of thing really helped me. And then there are several things in literature that really, in the literature that really helped me. One of them is in the one of the pamphlets where it talks about, I can't remember which, whether it's before you take that first compulsive bite or one of the other ones that's sort of like that, where it talks about accept as being natural, that for a period of time you're going to want to eat. You don't have to act on it, but that, because sometimes I would think, well, I'm not working my program right because I want to eat. And, I know today that that isn't true, that means that I need to work on my spiritual stuff and I need to work on other parts of the program, but it isn't because I'm doing something wrong. The fact of the matter is that as a compulsive overeater, the most natural thing in the world for me is, I see somebody going like this, is to eat. That's the natural and unfortunately, sometimes the most easily accessible response emotionally to things going on in my life, whatever that is. The parts in the big book that talked about resentment, that never made any sense to me in the beginning. I didn't have resentments against other people. The person I resented was me. If I had done it this way or said it that way or, you know, held my head just right and done just the right thing, then everything would have been okay. So it was obviously me that didn't do it right. And, you know, obviously that isn't quite true. I didn't understand how to do, look at resentments of other people. Now, today, those things make a lot more sense to me. But they sure didn't at that time. And so when I did do a fourth step to begin with, I did it according to the chronological and looked at different time periods in my life. I spent a lot of time running, let me out of here. I lived in Tucson, Arizona for 3 years, and I lived in 9 different locations in the 3 years, 9 different addresses in the 3 years. And when I, just after that, I came into OA and I slowed down a little bit so that I moved about once a year. But sometimes it seemed like the for rent signs jumped up at me. But if you look at the difference in that kind of a statistic alone, that now I have been married to the same person for 26 years, and although we haven't lived the whole time in one house, we've lived the whole time in 2 houses. And that was because we moved to a different town because my mom had Alzheimer's and we wanted to move back to Oregon to be closer to her. But, you know, those are the things that those statistics alone tell a huge story about me. And the changes in me, I mean, my sister says, "You're such a nicer person now." Oh, gee, you know, I like myself a little better. And I am really grateful because, OA in Portland isn't as big as it used to be in the 80s. But I think in many ways the quality of the abstinence and the quality of the recovery of the people who are there is hugely better. And I am really grateful for, I hope that's true around here too. I know that everywhere people have strong meetings and not so strong meetings. And that certain people seem to have that spark, whatever that is. And I am really grateful to God in my life who managed to give me the willingness at some point in time to say, "I'm willing to do what you, my friend, do, no matter what it is today. I don't know if I'll be willing to do it tomorrow. But today I'm willing." And that's the day that my abstinence started. Thanks. Questions. Okay.
If you
say it, we'll repeat it.
For motivation and to get us to stay, like one of you said, it sometimes is a little bit uncomfortable with people of all ages, but sometimes it's a little bit lonely to not have too many people.
Okay, so the question is, do you have advice for people who are in their 20s? Jerry, you look like you have some.
Thanks. I'm 20-something. Can't you tell by looking at me? 20 times 3, maybe. But, you know, when I first came to OA, I was 43. And it still looked like there was a lot of blue hairs in there, you know? So I can kind of understand what you're saying. One of the things I used to hate, I hate hearing people say to young people, oh, you're so lucky that you're getting in so early. It's like, you know, I feel bad for you because you're going to miss some of the new flavors that are coming out because if you're abstinent. But what I can tell you is what worked for me, of course, I'm a little bit your senior. However, what worked for me was to have a shift in my thinking that OA does not deprive me of anything. Like, oh, I can't eat this, I can't eat that, and, you know, those old farts in there, whatever, you know. I had to change how I felt about that, that the truth for me today is I don't want to eat those things anymore. That I can eat anything I want, but I don't like what eating certain things buys for me, or overeating. I don't like how that feels anymore. You know, sometimes we go out for dinner, and I don't weigh and measure in a restaurant, so, you know, I might have had a little more to eat than I normally do, and it reminds me of that feeling in my stomach, like, oh, I don't want to feel like that anymore. I like this lightness that I have today, and that I'm not encumbered physically, that anything I want to do, I can do. Well, I'm slowing when I'm thinking that because I have arthritis now, so there are some things I want to do I can't do anymore, but I'm not encumbered by being morbidly obese. And that, perhaps being a young person coming into OA, you may be deprived of several more years of eating like that. You know, that you don't have to eat like that again, and that life offers so much more through abstinence. So I guess it's just a change of attitude to see that I chose a lifestyle that beats anything that I felt from eating. I remember when I was, what year was that? 1987. I had some health problems that year, and I was down to a size 5. I have some anorexic years too. I went on the alcoholic bulimic diet for a while. That was real interesting. But I remember I got married to my second husband. I also have a propensity for other addictions. But I remember wearing this like little size 7 or 8 blue dress. I remember that when we got married. And that was in July. And October, we were going to a concert. And I was laying on the bed trying to pull a zipper up on a size 16 pair of jeans and say, what happened? I'm a size 8. And all of a sudden, I can't pull a zipper up on a size 8. I mean, that's how a food fog can take us out. And that you don't have to live like that anymore. And I don't care if you're 18, 28, 58, 68, it doesn't matter. That we have this gift that's offered to us. And thank God that you have the willingness at whatever age you're given the gift to grab it. So I'm glad you're here. I mean, because I learn a lot from you. A newcomer, no matter what age, reminds me of where I came from. So when a newcomer speaks in a meeting, I always listen. So another question?
Yeah.
Go ahead. You
want to
say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, that I was 27 and I felt like I hadn't grown up. One of the things that I think is, for me, I didn't have a lot of people the same age as me when I came in. There weren't that many people that were around, period, but there are a couple of meetings in my area where there are several young people, and I think that having people that are my age or at least have the same kinds of interests that I have to do things, to hang out with and do things with is really helpful, was helpful to me, and it's so cool to see people doing that kind of thing together these days, whatever your age, to find people that you identify with. And, I never left because I, like I said before, I never saw much percentage in it. Yeah. Did you want to say something on that subject? Yeah, that's a good one.
I was lucky when I came in that there were four or five people in the meeting that I attended that were roughly the same age. And we talked every single day, whether there was a meeting or not. And when I started out in Cleveland, there was only one meeting a week. So we had to rely on other tools. We talked to each other all the time. And, you know, meetings are nice, but I find that using the telephone and these days internet, email,
texting
is really works so well. It's nice to just in the middle of the day to look at my phone and I get a text from somebody in program, "Hi, I was thinking of you."
Yeah, you had a question. So my question is, what can I do when I want to eat and the food is talking louder than my higher power? Mm.
Repeat the question. Okay, the question was, what do I do when I want to eat and the food is calling louder than higher power is? What I found really, really works is that there are 9 tools of this program, and there's a reason that there are 9 tools in this program. And sometimes not everyone will work. I've gone through cravings where I'm going, okay, first thing I do is I take out a pencil and paper and I start writing about it. And I write and I write and I write. Then if that doesn't work, and most of the time it doesn't, I'll say, okay, that didn't work. Next tool, I'll go and pick up the big book. And sometimes I'll just thumb through, stop at a page at random. And usually, 9 times out of 10, within a page or two, it's, oh, that's what's bothering me. Or I'll call my sponsor. Or if nothing else works, I'll just pray, God, remove it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll just close my eyes. And if it doesn't work, you know, God, please remove the desire. God, please remove the desire. And I could say that for a half an hour straight. And then suddenly it's like as quickly as it appears, it usually disappears. You know, if I've learned one thing in this program, it's that a craving is a craving. It's temporary. And as much as I think, I need to eat, damn it. If I've just had lunch, it's going to pass eventually. And all I need to do is, there's the type A part of my personality that goes, I cannot last this damn thing. But to me, it's the tools.
God.
Yes, see?
Hold on. I wanted to add something to that. And this isn't in any of the literature, but I've discovered something that works really well for me, and it's a 3-step process. I have a lot of compassion for myself because you have to understand, I ate for 43 years, and I'm only in recovery 21 years. So just by sheer repetition, guess what I'm better at? So, and that probably served a purpose for me for a long time, that I had food to turn to instead of something else, you know. So when my head tells me to eat something that's not on my plan of eating or timed eating or something, I thank it for sharing. I just say, thank you for sharing. Because that worked for a long time. So my head is going to remember that and say, oh, you know, a cookie's going to make you feel better. Well, thank you for sharing, but remember, we're not doing that anymore. And if I get the thought a second time, then I warn my head. I say, listen, if you keep this up, I'm going to tell on you. And then the third time, I tell on it. I'll pick up the phone and I'll call somebody. It doesn't even have to be somebody in OA. You can tell somebody sitting next to you at the desk next to you and say, you know, I can't believe how loud those cookies are in the break room. Because people get that. They really do. So I just tell myself, like, I'll text somebody and say, there's cookies in the break room, and I'm not going to eat them. Because it's like it's making a commitment. And if I'm going to a place where there is a lot of temptation like that, I bookend it, which is another good tool to know. And that's tell on yourself before you go in, text your sponsor, caller, whatever, him, and say, I'm going in now and I'm coming out abstinent. And then when the event is over, call back and say, I'm abstinent. You would be surprised at how those kind of commitments solidify your commitment to abstinence.
Yeah, you had a question.
I came in back to OA. I think you were originally 81. I came back to OA about 5 years ago, lost 100 pounds, and have been kind of going up and down about 10 pounds. And I still have weight to lose. I'd like, probably for medical reasons, I should be under 70. And I'm finding at my age, maybe, that it's extremely...
Okay. So the question has to do with getting older, being abstinent, but not a losing abstinence for somebody who needs to lose. And I, you know, I can definitely identify with this. I'm a person who's been really active in my life. And when I was early in program, I would eat large portions of food without any particular consequences, large portions of abstinent food, without particularly gaining weight or having problems with that. But today I'm 65 years old, or almost 65 years old, 64 and a half, and... I too, there is not that kind of room for me to have a little bit more. And one of the things that I've found is that I can say that there's a lot of hope, because if I'm willing to tweak, just if I'm eating to maintain... and I'm maintaining as I'm eating, then I need to look at some of those little things. You mentioned an extra piece of fruit, or a little extra of this, or a little extra of that, or a percentage on the milk fat, the amount of butter or margarine, those little things make a huge difference. And just, I know that it would be good if I was down a little bit more too. And I'm not sure, I don't know. I'm sure that there are OAers who are very happy to be maintaining a very nice low weight, but, I would not mind losing more. And I have to ask a lot for willingness, to be willing to eat a little bit less. The idea that I'm not going to starve before breakfast is sometimes very hard, but I always feel more feelings when I cut back on food, and I have to be ready to know that does happen for me. And to be willing to walk through that abstinent anyway, because, part of the problem, of course, is that there's dieting and there's being on a losing abstinence that's God-given. And I cannot do it as much as I want to. I can think all the good things and do know what to do and not be able to pull it off. And I have to continuously turn it over to God.
I wanted to add to that. Aging has its own challenges. And as I've been maintaining a healthy body weight for 20 of the 21 years I'm in recovery, but this last year my body weight is up because of medication. And I went through the same thing 10 years ago. I have a crazy thyroid, and right now it's on the upside, and the medication slows your metabolism down. And, you know, for right now, I'm not going to be losing any weight until I'm totally off this medication. It's cut down, so that means, you know, what I want to do is get on the scale tomorrow morning and have 20 pounds be off because they cut the medication in half, right? That makes sense, right? But so there's, I don't want to say I accept where I'm at, but I had to get a level of acceptance as this is where I'm at right now, and God, when God's ready, things are going to change. You know, and the last time this happened, I got up one morning and I called my sponsor and I said, F it, I'm eating pizza tonight. If I'm going to be a big fat slob, I'm eating pizza. And she encouraged me to wait until she called me back. So I ate my weight and measured breakfast. I packed my weight and measured lunch thinking about this dinner I was going to have. And she called me back and she encouraged me to go to a treatment center near my house. And so I picked up my 10-year OA medallion in treatment before I relapsed. So, you know, and we can be as long as we're maintaining or working toward a healthy body weight, we're abstinent. And right now I'm not, you know, I'm never going to look like a Barbie. And if you've lost a lot of weight like me, and what happens is gravity takes over and starts pulling that crap down. So there's more swing and skin and whatnot. So spandex is my friend. But, you know, I'm working with a healthcare professional to help me to lose weight because I feel like I want to be at the healthiest body weight I can be at. So I'm making a financial investment in myself. And so that might be something you want to do, is to go to a professional, say where you're at, and see what it's going to take for you to go in the direction of the physical recovery you're looking for.
Everyone else has pretty much said what I wanted to say, but I went through a period where I did put on a little weight, and my sponsor at the time kind of knocked some sense into me, because what I realized that I was doing is I was giving the weight a lot of power. And she said to me, look at what an abstinent portion is. The idea, I was so obsessed with food before program. 10 minutes after breakfast, I was already obsessing about what was for lunch. And what OA has given me, the weight loss, I will not lie, the weight loss is wonderful. The weight loss is really nice. Being able to, I did my first marathon and only marathon at age 60 after being abstinent. I couldn't have done that in my 20s. But I realized that what OA has gotten me more than the physical recovery is the freedom from the obsession of food. And usually when I'm obsessing about the weight, it's about there's something in my life that's going on. And immediately it goes to the weight. My disease is one of perfectionism. And more I have become in touch with the fact what this perfectionism has cost me. And I'm doing, you know, it's funny. Once I let go of all of that, do it, the stuff like the physical exercise and eating right and do the things that I need to do to maintain the physical recovery, kind of has gotten a little bit easier. A lot of people ask, which comes first, the physical recovery or the spiritual recovery? And it's like, that's like asking what came first, the chicken or the egg. I need to do both. Without the physical recovery, I don't have the spiritual recovery. And without the spiritual recovery, I don't have the physical recovery. So it really just kind of goes hand in hand for me. Hi, Richard.
I had an old sponsor that just pissed me off on a regular basis. He'd look at me and he would say, did you ask for help today? That's one of the questions he would ask me. Did you ask for help today? And the other question was, what step are you working on? We get all wrapped up in tools and a lot of other stuff and over here is anonymous. But it's the steps. What step are you working on? And did you ask for help? Mm-hmm. Or a question, whatever you want to do.
The comment slash question that Richard had was, there are two things that his sponsor used to say to him. Number one is, did you ask for help today? And number two was, what step are you on? Either of you want to comment on it?
Ditto.
I'll pass. That's my husband. Thanks.
You make a good point, Richard.
Yeah.
Anybody else have a question? Or a comment?
No, it's about 5:10.
All right, so. You'll wrap it up, Mary.
Okay. What do y'all consider maybe you don't remember?
What do you consider a binge? Maybe we don't remember.
Right. The question is, what do you consider a binge? Let me try to formulate this a little bit. For me, a binge was just the total loss of control. And it was as much mental as it was physical. And just accompanied by the obsession.
I haven't binged in 21 years. And I'll tell you, when I first came to OA in Central Florida, what I'm hearing out here in California is a lot of people do some intuitive eating and some things like that. Well, I don't have that in me. I weigh and measure my food. And I eat, I follow a specific food plan. Well,
I think we're done.
I'll talk to you later.